You won't find any fake news here. As a matter of fact, in our little sphere, the facts are solid, the approach genteel, because the guests and their talents are very real. Yes, this is where the arts and culture of Western Wisconsin congregates and converses. Welcome to Spectrum West, everybody. I'm Al Ross. Good show coming up. Saturday is Halloween, so why not talk about the classic fright films of a year in which over 120 of them were produced, 1988. Michael Hegel teaches entertainment design at UW Stout. He loves to talk about it. I'll do that with him later on in the show. The Phipps in Hudson has a new director. We'll say hello to Darby Lunsford. West Wisconsin has a large, proud network of libraries, all of whom are doing extraordinary things during extraordinary times. Our guest is Rebecca Kildee, who oversees public relations and communications for that group. And let's launch the good ship Spectrum with this. I was shopping at an Eau Claire establishment well known for wholesome things to ingest. And given that my dog is now 13 years old, she's eating smarter than ever before. So when I noticed a bright silver bag with a colorful logo that read Nick's Dog Treats, I investigated. The bag contents looked good enough to eat, and it turns out the story behind Nick's Dog Treats is more than good enough to share. It's happening just outside of Augusta, Wisconsin. There is a Nick, and there is his mom, Jennifer Hinsey. We spoke the other day. So now, before we talk about your actual process, tell us in a nutshell Nick's story and what he's had to endure for the last 17 years.
Well, Nick was born 10 weeks premature, and we were actually on vacation when he was born. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, actually.
Okay.
A helicopter came and got him and flew him back to North Carolina where we lived, and we got on a plane the very next day and flew back. And we stayed in the NICU for 2 months. Then at 11 months old, he was diagnosed with cerebral palsy. He's been, you know, in physical therapy, occupational therapy since then, and he's had multiple surgeries.
Confined to a wheelchair?
Yeah.
Communication skills and all that other stuff?
He's as verbal as we are.
Oh, good.
He's actually listening to you. I have you on speaker.
Hey, Nick, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, good.
Attaboy. On paper, the story of Nick's journey quotes you as saying, "At the time, I didn't know it, but my life has been changed for the better," unquote. You appear to be a very positive person, kind of half full, not half empty, look at the bright side, that sort of thing. Did you know that about yourself back then?
Mm-hmm. We had a group home in our neighborhood when I was growing up as a kid. So I would always go over there, and when it was someone's birthday, I would bake them a cake. And then when I was in middle school, my 8th and 9th grade English teacher was a quadriplegic. I would always be his student helper and help him with everything he needed. I eventually started babysitting for his kids. I kind of learned a lot about disabilities and how to take care of people way back then. And I just remember seeing a show one time about kids with disabilities and how people kind of shunned them. And I had told my mom, I said, you know, if God ever wanted to give anybody a child with disabilities, he should give them to me. So I just always say that this is why I was put on this earth and that it was meant to be this way. You know, I've never wished anything different.
Good. In May of 2018, as often happens in the spring, someone had a fresh idea, something that could change the way one thinks about life. Then about 5 months later, it all became real. I'm guessing that you like dogs. Maybe you have a dog or two or three. You must also like to bake. I was going to ask, why dog treats? Why not cookies or granola bars? But when I look at the bag that I bought for my dog, I mean, they are cookies and they are granola bars, but they're just for dogs. How much of that is correct?
You wouldn't believe how many people we've actually had that eat them themselves.
I haven't done that yet, but I might.
I get comments all the time that people have told me they've tried them. And I said, well, it's okay because all it is peanut butter, banana, and oatmeal. So there's no preservatives in it. We thought of dog treats because, well, I personally have always loved to bake, and Nicholas has always liked to help me bake.
Cool.
And the reason we started it was because he got a new wheelchair that raises up and down, and we realized that when it raised up, he could reach the counter. So then he started helping me a lot more. I just said one day, Nick, what should we make? And we were just like looking at our dog, and we said, well, why don't we make some dog treats? Because I needed something that was going to be just a few ingredients for Nick. to be easy for him. So that's how we kind of started, just put something on Facebook and said, hey, does anybody want dog treats? Nick is making some. And that's how the whole thing took off.
Wonderful story. We're on the phone with Jennifer Hinsey, and Nick Napolitano is also on the phone with us, the namesake of Nick's Dog Treats. I just picked up my first bag, and that's what spawned this conversation. I got curious because they're made in our neck of the woods. So, Nick, how does it feel to have your name plastered in bright colors on all these packages going through checkouts?
I really like making the dog treats, and I sometimes we give them to some people that want them. And there was a thing called Nick's Pet Snacks, but now we call it Nick's Dog Treats.
It's a cool logo. And you have shirts, too. I saw that on your website. That's cool.
Yeah, and I also have coffee mugs.
So when you're out and about, have you ever had the opportunity where someone said, you're that Nick?
Yeah, I have, actually.
Good. Yeah, I mean, you're a celebrity to me, so congratulations on that. Jennifer, you just passed your two-year anniversary. Has this turned out to be a bigger deal than you imagined, or is it kind of what you imagined, or how's it been going?
It's definitely been bigger than I imagined, yes. We get very busy around the holidays, so right now we're extremely busy with Halloween.
I bought the treats that I have in a retail outlet. I'm guessing from the look of your website, the brunt of your sales, is it online mostly?
Yes.
It kind of looks like an assembly line. Does it feel like that?
Kind of, yes, right in our kitchen.
So what kind of plans do you have for this?
Well, I mean, we would love to get in a lot of stores. We do have a few places, like local places in Augusta and Fall Creek, that do sell them. Mm-hmm. But we would love to get, you know, in more stores in Eau Claire. We've probably shipped, I bet you, to all 50 states.
I bought mine at Just Local Food, the cooperative.
Yes.
Pet stores, is it tough to get in those places?
Well, I haven't actually went in there yet. I think if I got that busy, I would probably have to have a whole lot more help.
Now, how often are you and Nick in the kitchen making these things? How many days a week?
Right now, every day. That's how we are around all the holidays. We dehydrate them, and then the next day we take them out of the dehydrator and bag them all and start all over again.
A lot of people who come up with a successful product do focus groups, and they test it out on things. Did you, just in your heart of hearts, know that a dog would love this combination?
Well, first we've kind of test-tasted them with our own dog and, you know, and some friends and neighbors with their dogs.
Sure.
And I do know that most dogs love peanut butter.
Oh, yeah.
So that was just an easy three-step recipe that we found. Again, because I needed it to be easy for Nick. We have been through a lot of trial and error with it. I didn't realize that for them to stay good for so long, they would need to be dehydrated. So we had to do a lot of testing with that.
Mm-hmm. So, Nick, give me a description of what it's like to make this stuff. Is it kind of messy? You got a lot of stuff flying around the kitchen when you're working?
No, it's really cool. I help Mom put all the stuff in it. It's made out of oat milk, peanut butter, and banana.
What do you have, a cookie cutter that does all this?
Yeah.
Have you counted how many of these things you make in a day?
Yesterday we made about 600.
Yeah, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. Well, all I can say after hearing this story is, Nick, you got the right mom, and Jennifer, you got the right son.
Exactly. We think so, too.
Good for you.
Our ultimate goal is to be able to have a storefront where we can hire other individuals with disabilities.
Okay,
so
good.
They can, to make sure that they have a job when they graduate high school. That's exactly why I started this for Nick, because I've seen a lot of kids leave high school and not be able to get jobs. Since 2012, I've actually worked in the Eau Claire County School District with the special needs population. We've talked to the DVR program, which is Department of Vocational Rehab. So that would be my plan, is to have a storefront where kids involved in DVR can come and use Nick's Dog Treats as a place to get their job experience. And then once they graduate high school, you know, can work there. But it just takes a whole lot of money to, you know, find a place and then have it built out so you can make it a workable space. That's what I need, someone that would be willing to help me make that become a reality.
Sure. Get somebody there filming you doing what you do. Make that little promotional video and then put together a Kickstarter or a GoFundMe page. I mean, a lot of people come out of the woodwork and donate for things a lot less marvelous than this. I have to tell you, I often think about the term special needs, and I realize that it might be true, but special gifts also applies because it's twofold. People like Nick often look at their situation as nothing more than a challenge, and along the way, they give us such an inspiring perspective on how to live our lives. So congratulations to both of you guys, and thanks for being with us on Wisconsin Public Radio, Jennifer Hinsey and Nick Napolitano. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
There you go. Treats, shirts, coffee mugs. They have some of it. I think this is just the beginning. Nick'sDogTreats.com, folks. Pass it on when you can. Down the road on Spectrum West, a few days before Halloween, a book about creature features of 1988. And libraries are doing what needs being done and a lot more, because that's what libraries do. For now, the Phipps. That's really all one has to say to conjure up an image of the city of Hudson's pride and joy, the art center that brings people together and has done so for so many years. My Spectrum West tenure has periodically included chats with Executive Director John Potter. However, from now on, as I imagine John enjoying his retirement, I'll be talking with new Executive Director Darby Lunsford. We had our first conversation earlier this week. Well, a belated welcome from someone, if all goes well, with whom you'll be speaking somewhat frequently over the years. How's it going so far? Good?
Yeah. It's going well. It's crazy times at this point, but, you know, we're finding safe ways to do things. We have a great board that's really helped prepare my coming in and helped prepare the way for COVID safety protocols. So thankful for that and was able to kind of come in and hit the ground running on those and add some programmings. And so far, I think it's been well.
So now, do you sound like John Potter on the phone on purpose? So that there...
I don't. I've been told that before.
So that there isn't this cold turkey thing. Well, way to go. Smart to help the transition that way.
Yeah.
I thought of that the first time I heard your voice. As you said, you've been told that before, huh?
I've heard that a few times.
Oh, good. Well, I think it's comforting, but of course, we're looking for fresh air, and John is probably fishing somewhere. I don't know.
Maybe. I think he's taking up the trumpet again.
Oh, is he? Good
yeah.
for him. Good. All right. Well, that's fishing of sorts, I guess.
Yeah.
I always had the intention of talking to John before he retired. I did not get that opportunity. But John, if you're listening, have a great retirement, buddy. A bit of who you are professionally. Prior Chief Marketing Officer, Minnesota Opera. Also marketing communications with the Children's Theater Company of Minneapolis and the Shakespeare Theater Company in Washington, D.C. All of whom, by the way, spell it theater R-E. And I do believe, because it has European, namely French origins, the R-E spelling is perceived as kind of more she-she. Some say, look at the word theatrical, and there you have it, how the letters are supposed to be arranged. But I was so obsessed with this, Darby, and thank you for putting up with me on this, that I read further, and one website about grammar that looked pretty official said, Chaucer spelled it R-E, Shakespeare spelled it E-R. Huh?
Interesting, yeah. I always thought of it as a place versus the art form.
Sure.
So the R-E denotes an actual physical building or place.
E-R
is the art form.
Well, I'll take your word for that.
Based in nothing, just experience, I guess.
Enough of my obsession for now. You have a degree in theater from DePaul. I read an internet or newspaper bio that stated that you were bitten by the theater bug at age 13, but that you knew early on that your career wasn't going to be as an actor. Tell me about that.
Yeah. Well, I started in community theater at the ripe old age of 13, as you noted, and I tried out for Billy and on Golden Pond, and a 13-year-old happened to get the role of a 13-year-old, and I think that was just kismet and where it started. I went to the theater school at DePaul, which was an acting conservatory, and I didn't get in the acting side, and that was my hint to say that maybe that wasn't the track I should take, but I did get into the theater study side. Really had a great experience there, learning everything from house management, stage management, playwriting, building sets, hanging lights. They really, you know, have a great program that's all-inclusive, and somebody that's really thinking about administration in the arts, like myself, then I think it's a great program and probably gave me a great grounding for this job now.
You did get the Billy part?
I did. Well, I did. Yeah. I got many parts in high school and was also involved in choir and competition. But, yeah, when I got to college, I was kind of out of my league on the acting side, so I went for the admin.
Okay. I would think as a teenager that part of Billy would be wonderful because you could literally have the attitude for which a teenager is expected. You know,
exactly. I got the curse on stage and
Ooh, there you go. Good for you. The St. Croix Valley is now your neighborhood. You reside in Stillwater, but you've been there and back, meaning to a place called Broadway. Then September 11th of 2001 had an effect, and you decided to go west, young man.
Yeah.
You stayed there a good while, getting more experience. And then Minneapolis, which many professionals find holds its own in the world of theater and entertainment. Tell me about your impressions of the Twin Cities after having been to the Great White Way and the City of Angels, or Tinseltown, previously.
Yeah, I just thought it was such a great part of the country. I mean, having gone to school in Chicago, I wasn't so scared of the Midwest or the weather. And I had a couple of occasions just to be in Minneapolis. One, I was doing a project with the Children's Theater Company before I sat in the seat there and was brought to the Twin Cities, and then had another a time to be here, and just really loved the city. I love the feel of it. I love that it just felt livable, but you also had such great art around you, and you had access to that. Really, really fantastic restaurants. And, you know, coming from big cities like New York, L.A., and D.C., it was quite affordable for what you actually got as a citizen, and that was really exciting, too.
Darby Lunsford with us. He is the new, 3 months new, executive director at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. Beautiful place, wonderful programs. The release, Darby, that I read about you joining the Phipps called the beginning of your tenure a, quote, new era of growth and artistic excellence, end of quote. Given our current situation, you probably would have to admit that it can really only get better, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm building on a great history already. So, you know, I would hope I continue those traditions, finding, you know, new paths as we move forward, not only, you know, during this COVID time period, but, you know, what the arts are going to be as we move forward into the future as well. I think there's a lot of opportunity, a lot of uncertainty, but I think art will always prevail, and I'm looking forward to seeing how we carry that out.
Talk about a time to make a career move and become the executive director of an arts center. I was going to say you must like challenges, but I want to be more acerbic than that. Well, you like pain? What?
Well, you know, being in the arts, and, you know, it's been my life. It's been my life for, 25 years now. And so I wasn't going to escape these times of COVID because I was at an arts organization anyway. So it's a bit smaller. It's a smaller organization. It has a smaller budget. It has a really strong board. It has a really good financial position. And so I was interested in the challenge, as you said, to steer the ship through this, as opposed to just being one of the employees at a larger organization working on it. But in this case, being able to kind of sit in the seat and use my knowledge and experience. I've been through, you know, a couple of different problematic periods, and, you know, with the last financial downturn and bringing organizations through that. So I felt more confident in terms of just stepping in and steering a ship like this.
A lot of people using the analogy of fitting into John Potter's shoes, et cetera. He had a wonderful run of over 30 years. But, you know, this isn't John Potter, too. This is Darby Lunsford, and I'm sure that's what the board and the committee that looked at people and decided you were the best fit had in mind. You feel that freedom, do you?
I do. I do. I feel, you know, quite supported by the board and the staff here, just coming in to understand. And they've given me great support and help to really know the organization, start to really understand the community better as we start to look at the future and understand where this organization can and should go, particularly coming out of this time period.
You just, in a couple sentences ago, described the Phipps in physical ways and budget ways, but you have described the Phipps as, quote, the artistic heart and soul of a dynamic and vibrant community. You must have thought that. That must be really true in your heart. Otherwise, you wouldn't have taken the position.
That's exactly right. And, you know, my experience as that kid at 13, I don't know what path I would have taken if I didn't get that role and start to be able to call the theater my home. And so I understand how important it is. I understand what a center like this can do for a community, what access it can give, what opportunities it can bring, what joy it can bring to a community. And so, you know, that's why I'm attracted to the arts, and that's why I've always wanted to work in the arts, because it is a bit of a greater calling. And being able to produce and bring my different skill sets from marketing, advertising, and fundraising to keep this organization strong for the community is really something that I wanted to do.
Darby, you're taking over at a time when question marks are still written all over everything that crosses your desk. How are you handling the uncertainty?
Well, you just have to kind of go with it a bit. I think there's often a pursuit of perfection that is a bit of an old administration tool. I don't think we can do that anymore. You know, we are faced with making the best decisions with the set of data that we have and trying to move forward in a smart and effective way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I kid around in this time period, it's you make a plan and then you just scrap that plan and come out with the other plan because you get, you know, things change so fast at this point.
Sure.
So it really is just kind of going with the flow and holding yourself, you know, accountable to the things you can control and then just going with those things that you can and really just making the best decisions as you can move forward.
Yeah. Plan B is it nowadays, isn't it?
Plan Z, I think. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Z. There you go. When I look back at the experience that you've had, which, again, is impressive, I have to think, and a lot of that I'm looking at has the word marketing attached to it and communication. I have to think that a pandemic has to be one of, if not the most challenging marketing assignments that you've ever had.
Yeah. I mean, it's. I think what we have to understand with arts organizations, particularly ones that have, you know, a building like ours, is we have to remind people when you can't visit the building that there's still a lot of impact that the organization can bring and has brought to the community.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a lot of ways, it's a great time to remind people and bring in the marketing and fundraising side to remind people of where the organization has been, what we've done with and for the community, and then start those conversations of looking into the future to say we will be here. We will be here with the great support of the community,
mm-hmm.
and this is how we're going to come out of this, and here's what we are planning on doing as well. So I look at it as that great opportunity to tell your story, to tell the stories of the people here who've made up this organization and tie that into what we're going to do in the future, you know, to give that hope and promise that we'll be around.
Yeah, you have the time now to say things that you wouldn't have had time to say in the past. Yeah, sounds like you're making good use of that time. In a nutshell, is it safe to say the Phipps Center is open with restrictions and will continue to offer alternative productions?
That's exactly right. We're trying to be very transparent about what steps were taken. We've published all of that on our website. We try to remind people anytime we have any type of email or marketing out there to say, here's the safety protocols that we're focusing on. We know that everybody can't visit in person. That's the right choice for them in this public health crisis. And so where we can, we are trying to figure out how we can offer virtual offerings as well.
All the information there is to be had that Darby and I were not able to get to in this wonderful conversation is available at the website to which he alluded a while ago, thephipps.org. Darby Lunsford, all the best. The Phipps is near and dear to the heart of West Wisconsin, and we really do like knowing that it's in good hands. So good luck.
Thank you so much, Al.
Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for being with us. Support for WPR comes from Charter Bank of Eau Claire, offering the mobile app that provides access 24/7 to view balances, pay bills, and more. Available on iPhone, iPad, and Android. More is at charterbank.bank. Hey, guys, since I have a little extra time, I'd like to mention briefly that Jim Oliver has decided to allot more time to retirement than he has in recent years, meaning that he will not be contributing guest segments to Spectrum West. However, should everything get back to normal, my fingers are crossed that he'll consider providing his onstage sections listing what the many West Wisconsin theater companies are up to. He has said he would think about that. I don't really have the words to thank Jim, who volunteered his time for all the years I've been doing the show, plus several more when Kathy Stahl was your host. Jim is the essence of what makes WPR so special and why it feels the way it does to listeners, because it's real people talking with real people. And thankfully, folks like Jim are willing to pitch in. So, Jim, thank you for all your years of generous contributions. Enjoy the time off and keep in touch. Libraries, the hearts of communities affected as we all are by the pandemic and its restrictions, but never discouraged about how to keep those hearts beating robustly. In western Wisconsin, it's a plurality that numbers 53 members of the IFLIS system. Rebecca Kildee is Public Relations and Communications Coordinator.
Some library buildings are closed because we care about the safety of our communities, but we continue to offer services that are appropriate in our community. So we've got lots of options for people to connect with their local library, even when the building is closed.
This might not be the way it is officially, but the way I think about it is librarians are to be considered some of those frontline workers. They're coming up with cool things. Libraries, to me, are essential parts of the communities. If that weren't the case, there would not be 53 libraries within 10 counties in the IFLIS system, and it wouldn't be around your system and its official capacity for over 40 years, would it?
That's correct. And one of the first public libraries in Wisconsin goes all the way back to the 1800s. So public libraries have been active parts of their communities for years. And I am so honored to be working with this group of people. Librarians are so creative and professional and compassionate and really involved with their community.
You used to be called something else. Now your initials are still the same.
We changed our name to align with the work that we do. IFLS stands for Inspiring and Facilitating Library Success. We support our libraries and our systems. We manage the Moore catalog. We provide continuing education and training resources for our librarians, tech and website support, and shared cataloging services. So that means that when you search for something on our Moore online catalog and you find what you are looking for, you can thank a cataloging librarian.
There are so many ways that the libraries are continuing to be the tremendous resource that they've always been, with a little adjusting. You have, Rebecca, some superstars located at various libraries who are doing marvelous things in their communities to keep the library not only open and vibrant, open can be a virtual term as well, but also operating at the highest capacity that it can under the circumstances. And in a release that I received, you gave some examples. Let's talk about a few of those. You have Augusta, Glenwood City, River Falls, Hudson, Ellsworth, Rice Lake, Eau Claire, and Hammond listed. Give me an example or two of things above and beyond the call of duty.
Sure. One thing that almost all of our libraries did as soon as they could was develop systems for curbside pickup. Even when the library building is closed, people can get those books and movies and CDs that they really want. That's contactless. You know, you drive up and get all that stuff. And we've also taken some of our normal programming and made it available in other ways. For instance, story time and summer reading programs, those went online or outside, whatever was appropriate to that community, because libraries decide that for their own community. Ellsworth had a lovely Read with Your Hedgehog online program where kids could come in and read with a hedgehog. Bloomer and other libraries have created take and make bags that have activities or crafts, everything you need in the bag. You just come pick it up, bring it home, and you're good to go. Eau Claire and many other libraries this summer acted as food distribution sites in their communities. They continue to be just a stable local resource for people looking for really good information. Mm-hmm. And our librarians really care about our patrons and our communities. And so some libraries even made phone calls to their patrons that they knew needed that connection.
I was going to bring that up because your people are very good at bridging generational gaps. You are helping and assisting young people to live stream to seniors. There's a lot of interaction between the two. And by doing that, you're keeping both of them engaged.
That's right. Hammond Public Library worked with their local senior center to live stream story time from young kids out to the seniors, right into their rooms. And that really was a joyful moment for the seniors who felt really isolated at that time. Yeah, that's a great program. We also provide a really necessary service to a lot of folks. We know that internet access is an issue in rural Wisconsin, and all of our libraries, or most of our libraries, have Wi-Fi access outside of our building. Mm-hmm. So that people can drive up to the building and get access to the internet for job applications or downloading school information or whatever it is that they need.
Mm-hmm. Let me identify you. Rebecca Kildee is Public Relations and Communications Coordinator for IFLIS. It's a library system. Again, let's throw out those numbers. 53 local libraries in 10 West and Northwest Wisconsin counties. There's not only a pandemic going on, there's a heightened awareness of the diversity of America and inclusion. Hudson did a wonderful program that had those themes.
They did. It was one of their regular adult programs, and they met at a local venue and just talked about those issues. We also are doing a lot of collaborative programs to support people who find themselves in these new situations. So we recently, IFLIS, sponsored a webinar, Support for Caregivers Who Are Doing Public School at Home. And that is looking like it's going to spin out into a support group. So keep your eye open for that.
Libraries in general, I mean, we're talking about libraries' reactions and proactions in this weird time of ours. To some people, libraries seem passé, inconvenient compared to other ways of getting information. And yet, libraries are growing, not only in physical stature. We know some who have building and remodeling programs going on, but also in their abilities to serve. So in addition, because I don't think this is going away very quickly, and even after it does go away, you're going to be applying some of these to your regular way of doing business. What are people within your system doing to completely, and here's a phrase that I came up with, to completely think outside the book?
Think outside the book. I love that. Well, libraries have been thinking outside the book for quite a while now. Mm-hmm. We are a trusted and accurate source for good information in our communities. So throughout the pandemic, we have partnered with our public health departments where that's appropriate and other local services to make sure that people are getting the information they need in an accessible way. Also, Augusta Public Library is working in collaboration with Ellsworth, Ladysmith, Park Falls, Rice Lake to do online young adult and adult programming. And mm-hmm. everybody is welcome to that. You don't have to have a library card to do that. Uh-huh. You can go on to any of those websites and sign up for that programming. And we also are a place that people can go to get access to job development and job skills resources You can pop online and find what you're looking for outside of our MORE catalog. You can contact your librarian if you need something that you don't find on our catalog. You can get access to the whole world through your library.
Yeah.
And the wonderful thing about librarians, they're better than a Google search.
That's
they
true.
Are, yep, they're yep. trained professionals at yep. finding you good information based on what you need. Check out the library. We're here for you. We've got Doodle Diary Project going on. You can check out a doodle diary that other people in your community have filled out and add your contribution, send it back. It goes out to the next person. We've got kits. We've got games. Some libraries have snowshoes. We really are looking to provide each of our communities with the services and the information that they need.
You bet. Glad you brought that up, because librarians of the long past, my past kind of, had a certain reputation and a persona. They were intelligent, but they were quiet and they were refined. But librarians today, they are rock stars. You guys should do an entire marketing campaign that repositions librarians as the hip, tech-savvy, fun-loving, creative people they actually are.
Rice Lake Public Library has a TikTok.
Yeah, that's
They're
cool.
They're on TikTok.
Yeah.
So we are using all of the new tools that are available to us to expand and improve the work that we do in our community.
Good. Well, Rebecca Kildee, thanks so much. Keep up the great work. Libraries are still some of my favorite places to hang out. Keep us posted on all the wonderful things that libraries within the IFLA system are doing. We love to hear about it. Thanks.
Thank you, Al. It's been my pleasure.
Again, it's the IFLS system, IFLS. So you can search for that and check out all the good stuff that those people are doing. And the way things are going, I believe we will have some updates as to libraries' availability and their services. So keep your radio right where it is at Wisconsin Public Radio, and we'll keep you posted. Support for WPR comes from Marquardt Toyota, committed to delivering an authentic and enjoyable automotive experience. Marquardt Toyota is located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, or at MarquardtToyota.com. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Al Ross. Appreciate you being along for the ride. Last year, we spoke with Michael Hegel concerning his book about music in movies of the 1980s. And now that Halloween is upon us, out pops Michael Hegel with a book called Class of 88, Fright, Film, Annual.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened. Something different.
It's no shooting star.
Why here? Why now? Why clowns? They've been knocking them dead all over the universe.
Yeah, that's part of the trailer for the 1988 movie Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Michael Hegel loves the campy creature features, where it often appears that producers went out of their way to make the B and B movie stand for bad. And yet there's something about them that brings us back for more. We spoke with the UW Stout Assistant Professor of Entertainment Design to get our dose of more. A Let's reset the Michael Hegel stage. Raised and went to school in Mukwonago down in southern Wisconsin. In high school and college, you produced some movies. And, you know, this is a little different than the last time we talked. You now teach entertainment design at a university respected for its technical hands-on training. I like the fact that I know now that your movie Go to Hell was distributed by Troma. And for people who are unaware of Troma, it's kind of the Amazon or the MGM of B-horror movies, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Poor Lloyd and Mike Hertz, who created that company back in the 70s, they started making sort of very indie movies for the kind of drive-in market, but really found their wheels in the 80s when home video became big, and they just churned out bad movie after bad movie, yes. I am somewhat honored to be included in their repertoire, but they end up, they're still at it. They had a new movie last year, so still doing it.
And what does it say that one of the Bill Rabane movies that I starred in was redistributed by Troma back in the day? So it's a badge of honor of sorts for me.
It is. There's only so many, you know, Wisconsin's probably got more famous serial killers than famous filmmakers. So
sure.
You got to kind of take what you can get.
I know a guy who I've always respected. As soon as he told me that he just loves Troma and watches all the movies, he lost all my respect.
Exactly. It should. That is the right response.
There you go. Well, you and I talked in July of last year about a book about music in movies of the 1980s. You do like to move around, but the 80s seemed to be kind of a fixation. And after seeing your 88 hairdo in a photo in this book, it brought up, of course, memories of Ghostbusters, which was that 1984 iconic film. The 80s, Michael, was a very interesting and creative decade. The music was good. We were very good at entertaining ourselves. Any reasons for or data about that?
Yeah. So for me on this one, it was I was in college in 1988 and becoming really aware of this kind of horror boom that was occurring.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted product, there was something that was coming out almost weekly. I looked back at this list of things that came out, and there's about 120, 140 films that came out in this year.
Crazy.
And, you know, they were served not only in the theaters but also in video rental stores. I was working my way through college in a video rental store in Greenfield, the Best Buy, back when they had video rental in-house.
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, stocking the shelves with VHS. I think there's obviously a big sort of nostalgia factor here for me, but I think a new generation has really found these films, and maybe they're kind of tired of CGI films, or they're interested in kind of a more raw, rough storytelling, or maybe they're looking at it ironically with the bad haircuts and the funky music and things like that. But for me, it was kind of essential learning. I was out in the theater catching stuff as it came out, watching TV shows like Friday the 13th, the series, and Freddy's Nightmares on TV, and even magazines like Fangoria and Gore Zone, which was a spinoff of that magazine. It was really big business that year.
Back to the 80s, though, as why it was such a unique and creative decade. Why do you think that was? Was a very good generation of people coming into its own? Was America simply happy? Were we hungry for entertainment? Were we simply feeling good about what we had to work with? We had new toys and new studio equipment, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, you're right on all of those. I think the 70s, we had lived through Watergate and Vietnam and the civil rights movement, and we were looking for entertainment. We were looking for change. And in the late 70s, you had Star Wars really changing the direction of cinema. You had disco changing the direction of music from being kind of serious to kind of throwaway. I love disco, too. But by the 80s, it was full bore. I mean, it was a consumer culture. Pop was the leading culture. America was churning it out. So, yeah, into the midst of this, you had pop music feeding the movies full of really just kind of entertainment.
And then I ask the question, are we much too sophisticated now? You know, CDs were just coming out in the late 80s, and we've advanced so far past that. Plus, you know, whereas the violence was more implied back then, everything is so graphic today. Here's a good question to follow up. First of all, you could answer, do you think we're too sophisticated now? And maybe not, because we're glomming onto these things like your book, Good for Us. And the secondary part of that question would be, do you think we could reach a point where not much frightens us anymore?
Oh, yeah, great. Those are two good ones. So are we too sophisticated? I think some of us are and some of us aren't. And we have no excuse not to be, because we have access to all of this information. For me, watching these the first time in 88, maybe I caught a third of them if I was trying really hard. 10, 20% is probably more likely. But now you hop on Amazon Prime and you can find about 15 or 20 of these. Hop on YouTube, you can find 30 more. So between what you can read online, which for me, returning to the magazines of this era, I found an archive of them online, was able to look up anything I wanted. So there's really no excuse for us to not be the most sophisticated viewers ever. And yet, we just don't really have all of that much time, unless it's your field like it is for me, to really dig into this kind of stuff. And so a book like this one is really about skimming the surface, picking out some things that I thought were important, knowing that somewhere out there there's an audience for exactly the same thing as me, maybe from a nostalgia front, maybe from an ironic front, and that's okay by me. What was the second one? The second one was,
could we reach a point where not much frightens us anymore?
Oh, the whole fear factor. You know, I watch period films, 70s films, 80s films, now films of today, horror films of today, are really good. And the generation that's making those films grew up on the same films that we're talking about here. So there is a little bit of a different tolerance level. I don't think that the stuff today necessarily is more graphic. I mean, looking at some of the ones that I poured over for this book, they're not afraid to show a thing. But it tended to be, here's a pretty patently fake rubber head getting something awful done to it. And there's a charm to that, which is, I think there was a filmmaker who likened it to a magic trick. You know that it's fake, but you still are not really sure what happened, and you're kind of entertained by the thought of, I wonder if it was this, I wonder if it was that, I wonder how they did that trick.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you have a sort of a broad brush that everything's done in a computer. We know that it's safe, and some of that thrill is gone. For me, that equates to things like, I'll watch a Jackie Chan film and know that there are really people getting pretty really hurt in those things. And for me, that's the height of, you know, a commitment when you know that there's a real event.
That's Michael Hegel. He's a UW Stout Assistant Professor in Entertainment Design. His book is Class of 1988, Fright Film Annual. And by the way, Michael, I love the bloody page numbers. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, doing these kinds of books now, it's just so easy. Like I said, with having access to everything, the tools are on the desktop. The ability to self-publish is a click away. It was sort of a no-brainer for me to just continue to do these. And you can see that's volume two. Two of how many? We don't know.
Yeah. I love the names of some of those motion pictures. The Lair of the White Worm, I think, is probably my favorite. Slaughterhouse Rock, Killer Clowns from Outer Space, Dream Demon, Cellar Dweller. I'm kind of an alliteration guy anyway.
Yeah. Hey, Lair of the White Worm is Hugh Grant's first movie. Yeah. And he's fantastic in it. He's incredibly funny.
No kidding. The other one I wanted to bring up, the other person, was Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. But I wonder if I can say cleavage. Sure I can. But anyway, you know, that was her big deal. I mean, she was all made up, kind of loose looking. And as soon as I saw her name, and I think those of us who are old enough remember Elvira, Mistress of the Dark on television, I thought to myself, wouldn't that be a wonderful what do they look like now thing?
Cassandra Peterson is fantastically beautiful still. You know, she's got an incredible history. She dated Elvis when she was a showgirl.
Oh, wow.
She worked with, I believe, the Groundlings comedian troupe in L.A. around the same time that Paul Rubens, the guy who did Pee Wee Herman, was around.
You don't put Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, and Pee Wee Herman.
Well, I kind of do. I would kind of lump them into that beautifully retro comedy era of the late 80s. Between his TV show and her TV show, that's some of my favorite programming from that period. Technically, when the Elvira film was made, she had been offered, would you like to do a TV show? I think it was probably ABC or something, a half-hour comedy show where you would be the main character, a sitcom. Mm-hmm. And she said, no, I'm holding out to do a film. And they lost a year in the process. And then finally, the guy who was in charge of the studio said, yes, I managed to put the money together for this movie. Let's do it. And it's okay. It's cute. It should have done better, and it should have gotten a sequel. And but it's a pretty cute entry, and just PG-13 enough to keep you make your head turn a couple times.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
When I hear you talk about the things that you like about the 80s, we've talked about music, now we're talking about films, I think to myself, what is Michael Hegel like that we're doing nowadays? Are you entertained by stuff we're doing? But you have to be because you're an entertainment designer. All right, let's move on. So you didn't even have to answer that question.
I am current. I watched the Borat film this weekend and think it's fantastic.
Is it?
It actually has an incredible heart to it, which is a bit of a surprise after the first one.
Let's fast forward to today, even though we're talking in the here and now, when we're already kind of a bit traumatized by what's going on in the world, including a worldwide pandemic that isn't subsiding. Do you think, want more, or do you think we're putting the make-believe horror on the shelf until the real stuff goes away?
Oh, boy, I think this month is the total month to pull out all of the fake stuff. If anybody is not running out of energy this year on this whole thing that we've been through, I would be totally surprised. I think that once a week, minimum, people should be checking out, punching out, and doing something that's just fun. And for me, I try and do it like a little bit every day, which is how I got so many films watched this year. You know, we can all get through this. There's no better way to lock yourself in than a movie marathon, I think. Many a day of mine has been spent that way this year. And now that it's cold again, you know, the rest of the year is going to go that way, too.
Yeah. Where can we get the book?
So michaelhegel.com is where I've got links out to everything, including the films that I've made and the books that I've written. These are going to be printed on demand on a place called blurb.com, which if you are in the mood to put out your own stuff, I highly recommend them. It's a click away from being able to have a beautiful-looking hard copy of whatever it is that you've got in your brain.
Oh.
And I'm making this kind of a yearly process here and trying to keep going on these sort of, film buff books.
MichaelHegel.com. That is Michael Hegel, UW Stout Assistant Professor, Entertainment Design. The book is Class of 1988, Fright Film Annual. And we'll be talking to him again because I have a feeling he's going to have more books coming out. Thanks for putting us in the Halloween. And I always say Halloween. I don't say Halloween. Maybe Wisconsin people say Halloween. That might be the case. But thanks for putting us in the Halloween mood.
My pleasure, Al. Nice to talk to you again.
Oh, yes. Thanks, Dean, Kate, Patrick, Catherine, Jim, and you. Visit us at WPR.org to find all the Spectrum West programs neatly archived. Next week, a book about Wisconsin cocktails, we hope, when we might need one about then. We're looking to talk about talk to various orchestras to see how their pause button is going. Fermata, I think that's called. So, hey, join us next week if you can. We love being with you. Keep in touch. Take care of yourself. Wear a mask. Be good to each other. See you next week. Little Greg Gilbertson taking us home. Bye now.